Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to be back with you another week. The whole world is going to hell so fast that the handbasket manufacturers cannot keep up. And we're here to report on all that for you. And we may have some good news. It's possible there might be some good news. But we're going to start with a dog story, not unlike your late local news. Do you ever watch the late local news? Because we always watch it here at the McBurney compound. Just to see what the weather's going to be like. And just to see how close the perimeter of murder and mayhem is coming to the McBurney compound. And we've noticed as of late, I would say the last 2 years running, every night on the late local news, they have at least one dog story. They have to run a story about a dog or a cute puppy or a dog who was found, a dog who was lost, a dog who was hurt, a dog who got healed. It's always a dog story. And it's always at least 2 minutes long. And I wonder to myself, is there so little news that every night they have to report on some dog that was lost, found, healed, cured, hurt, injured, rescued? What's the world coming to? Well, we're going to start here with a dog story. This is from WTKR out of Newport News, Virginia. Last Sunday, police received a call regarding a dead animal reported at a home. Police arrived to find a dog dead, with what appeared to be stab wounds. Stab wounds, I said. The dog apparently had been stabbed. Now, a suspect has been arrested. He is 24-year-old Joseph Justison. He was arrested and charged with one count of felony animal cruelty. Cruelty? He killed the dog. Still just cruelty, huh? Seems like more than cruelty when you kill the dog. But back to the story. A knife was found in the vicinity of Mr. Justison, and he was found passed out on the floor near the dog. We don't have any toxicology reports as of yet, but I think it's safe to assume that Mr. Justison was under some sort, under the influence of something or other. Now, the report does not indicate that at any time the dog was stamped on or stomped upon. So we know that Mr. Justison, maybe he stabbed the dog to death. But he's not necessarily such a bad person because he didn't stomp the puppy. And if you listen to the Weekly Worldview, you know that around here, we stand four square against puppy stomping. And I just want to speak up right now and say that we also stand four square against puppy stabbing. We're not fans of any of that at all. Now, you may wonder, why is this story news? This was carried in on a national website as big news. Puppy stabbed to death. Well, here's the reason. The accused, Mr. Justison, who was found passed out near the dead dog and the knife, is a petty officer third class assigned to the USS Abraham Lincoln, according to the United States Navy, and he has been in the Navy since 2009. And the media never misses an opportunity to report on a service member's bad behavior. Now, so he didn't stomp the puppy. Maybe he's a decent fellow. And, well, he's in the Navy. So I guess he's a hero. I wonder if Sean Hannity would call this guy a hero. Anyway, puppy stomping makes national headlines, while the murder of certain classes of innocent people all across the country that goes on every day under the color of law, well, it rarely makes the news. Certainly doesn't make the late local news every night. But we wanted to bring you the puppy stabbing right here on the Weekly Worldview, just in case you missed it. All right. And now we'll move on. Into the justice file, let's talk about PFC Bradley Manning, although he may be a private now. Because usually when you get sentenced to 35 years for espionage, there's also a reduction in rank. But I'm not sure. Haven't heard. They still call him PFC Bradley Manning in this Associated Press story. He was, let's just read the story. He was pleading with a military judge for a chance to go to college and become a productive citizen. This was at his sentencing. Wants to go to college. He wants to be a productive citizen. Members of his family testified about his troubled childhood. And there was also testimony from a psychologist who said Manning felt extreme mental pressure in the hyper-masculine military because young PFC Manning suffered from gender identity disorder. Yeah, that's right. He says he is a woman trapped in a man's body. That's what he told. Well, that's what he told the psychologist that. And the head shrinker. And the head shrinker told the judge that he feels that he's a woman trapped in a man's body. PFC Bradley Manning, by the way, was convicted of the largest breach of data security in the history of the United States military. He leaked tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of documents to that little homo, Julian Assange, over at WikiLeaks, and was sentenced to 35 years, despite the pleadings and the weeping and the picture of him in a wig and makeup and all of that. Now, the headline on this AP story says Manning takes the stand and apologizes for hurting the U.S. That's the headline. But if you actually read the story, he didn't apologize. No. Let me read his alleged apology. Manning said that he knew what he was doing, and he said, quote, "I am sorry that my actions hurt people. I am sorry that they hurt the United States." So did you notice the wordplay there? Just, you know, disassociating himself one degree away from what he did. He says he's sorry his actions hurt people. Those were just my actions. And I'm sorry that those actions, hurt the United States. So I don't think that qualifies as an apology, Mr. Manning. And you know what? You can take your wig and all that, and you're going to prison for... I think he does less than 9 years. I think he gets out, he gets a reality show, writes a book, and quite possibly runs for Congress. Or he could be appointed to the Department of Defense at some high level in the intelligence field. Yeah, in the... would it be the Biden administration? In the Biden or Clinton administration? I could see that happening with young Mrs. Manning. Well, did you see the picture of him in the wig? He pulls it off as well as any other tranny I've ever seen. I expected him to look kind of clown-like with the wig and the smudged makeup and the overdone lipstick. But when you look at the picture, I mean, he pulls off the whole transgender thing as well as it's ever been done. So he says he wants to live as a woman now, which would be very convenient in prison. It'll give him an occupation. Anything else from this story? Manning appeared to struggle to contain his emotions several times during his testimony. Back in February, in open court, Manning condemned the actions of U.S. soldiers overseas and what he called the military's bloodlust. Bloodlust, he said. Who's the head shrinker here? Oh, the head shrinker, one captain in the Navy. He's a hero. He's a psychologist in the Navy, putting his life on the line every day for you and me and our freedom, ladies and gentlemen. Captain Michael Worsley says that he testified that Manning's gender identity disorder, combined with his narcissistic personality traits, his idealism, and his lack of friends in Iraq, caused him to conclude that he could change the world by leaking classified information to an albino homo hiding out somewhere. And where is, do we know where Julian Assange is hiding out? We've lost track of Assange. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, this head-shrinking hero, captain in the United States Navy, said that Manning was struggling to balance his desire to right wrongs with his fear of losing his GI benefits and the opportunity to attend college. That's a tightrope walk, you know, when you're trying to save the world, but you don't want to lose your bennies. I understand the struggle. What a heroic struggle Mr. Manning has gone through. Let's see, what else did the head-shrinking hero testify? He grew up with two alcoholic parents, and now this is worth noting. Young Bradley Manning's father left Bradley's mother when Bradley was just 12 years old. So it's no wonder Bradley's broken. He comes from a broken home. This is a perfect example of why it's called a broken home, because people end up broken and twisted and sick and criminal to where they do things for which they deserve the death penalty, which is what Mr. Manning has done. But he got over. He only got 35 years, of which he will do less than 9. That's my prediction. After which point, we'll be seeing him out and about. Let's see here. Now, Julian Assange has commented that Mr. Manning's apology is a statement that was extorted from him under the overbearing weight of the United States military justice system. It took years and millions of dollars to extract 2 minutes of tactical remorse from this brave soldier, Assange said in a statement. That's a lot of S's. All right. So that's the update on Bradley Manning. I think he's, do I have the story on his demand? I think he demands some kind of hormone treatment from the Army. And the Army said, no, we're not going to contribute any hormones to your gender transition. But worry not, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Manning will no doubt file civil proceedings against the United States government, and he'll get his estrogen shots while he's in jail. So there, that's it. All right, now, I'm going to have the last word on this Oprah Winfrey $35,000 per story. So I heard this Oprah. I know it's been talked about, but I was away, okay? And I want to get this in because I feel like it's important. I feel like I'm the only person in the world who noticed this. When this story first broke, I heard the interview with Oprah on the radio, not on television, because I was driving across country working hard to save America. And that's what I was. I was working hard to save America. We can all be heroes and great Americans. Even if you're just driving to work, you can be a hero and a great American. Just ask Sean Hannity. Anyway, as I was out being as patriotic as I could be, driving across country, I heard the interview with Oprah on the radio. And if you listen to it on the radio, it was very obvious that Oprah was making most of the story up. It was just obvious that when it got to the part of what did the store clerk say to you, Oprah, she had to stumble and stutter before she said, oh, she said, no, you can't afford that. You don't want to look at that one. I'm sorry. Anyway, it was obvious to me that Oprah made that part up. She flat out made it up, and if you heard it on the radio, it was obvious to anyone with ears to hear. But later on, when I saw it on television, I could see that Oprah was employing her acting skills, and she almost pulled it off as if it was true on television. But if you heard it on the radio, it was obvious that Oprah was lying. Is there anything else I wanted to say about that story? No. That's it. So that's the last word. Will Oprah get away with it? Of course she will. She'll get away with a bald-faced lie that ruined this store clerk's life, at least temporarily. She'll get away with it because the celebrity culture worships Oprah Winfrey for some reason. I don't know. I never found her all that good-looking or intelligent or particularly witty or anything. I remember, wasn't she in a movie? Wasn't it Fried Green Tomatoes? Was that the movie that Oprah was in like 30 years ago? She was playing some kind of slave. Anyway, I was just never impressed with Oprah. I don't know how, if there was ever a career that would make one suspect that a person had made some kind of deal with Satan down at the crossroads, it would be Oprah Winfrey's career, because I just don't get it. Anyway, let's move on from Oprah. We'll go to the justice system file. The U.S. Justice Department, according to USA Today, ordered the FBI to begin tracking crimes by its informants more than a decade ago. And the FBI is now required to report to the Justice Department all the crimes that their informants perpetrate. So they've got to submit that tally to top Justice Department officials each year. But that tally has never before been made public. But apparently, FBI agents authorize their informants to commit approximately 15 crimes per day. Yeah, while pursuing justice, keep that in mind. Justice is a messy thing in America, and oftentimes it means that the governing officials authorize the commission of certain crimes in order to arrest people for other crimes. I know, it's a little confusing, but about 15 crimes a day were authorized by the FBI. Everything from buying and selling drugs to bribing government officials to plotting robberies. Now, in their defense, FBI officials say that permitting their informants to break the law is an indispensable, if sometimes distasteful, part of investigating criminal organizations. The agency said that in a 2007 budget request, that it has a network of about 15,000 confidential sources. Now, tell me this isn't just an industry. Wasn't that the title of my last show, An Industry of Crime? This is the perfect example of crime becoming an industry on both sides. You got 15,000 agents or 15,000 informants, never-ending investigations that just grind on and on and on. The commission of crimes by informants and gangsters and mobsters and thugs and, well, sometimes even the FBI, because justice has become quite a messy affair. The ATF and the DEA said last year that they cannot determine how often their informants are allowed to break the law, but they're sure that it's sometimes and maybe even quite often. Yeah. So here we've got the crime industry in America in full swing. In fact, it may be the only part of the economy during this great Obama recovery. Yeah, the industry of crime may be the only growing part of the economy. Quiet down, boys. We've got to get back to the important news of the day. Spend all our time having fun with the guitars and whatnot. Got more news from the justice system industry. It's from Camden, New Jersey, from Channel 9. New Jersey's most impoverished city, that's Camden, New Jersey, is trying to use what they've called the Real-Time Tactical Operations Intelligence Center to reduce their police force by providing virtual patrols using 120 cameras placed strategically throughout the city. Each camera gives a view of a particular city street so that police back at headquarters can monitor activities without having to actually send police out into the field. They just have a massive, elaborate network of cameras and some flunkies back at headquarters just keeping their eyes on the cameras. The city has also started to use microphones called shot spotters to detect gunshots. We reported on shot spotters, it's got to be 3 years ago, maybe more, maybe back in the old days, maybe 10 years ago. Yeah, you have a bunch of microphones strategically placed throughout the city so that you can triangulate where a gunshot came from, and then you can send a cop there. Anyway, I'm sure Camden, New Jersey has gone broke trying to deal in health and human services rather than sticking to what the government should do, things like justice, police, and whatnot. So in their effort to make the world a better place, they've destroyed their city and they don't have enough money to hire the police, so then they fall back on technology. And I'm all for technology. Well, I just wish we didn't need it. I wish we didn't need so many police, and I wish we didn't need so many guns. Yeah, I want to come out and say, I have a lot of gun-toting Second Amendment listeners out there. And, well, I'm going to try to alienate you. No, I don't want to alienate you. But I want an America where nobody feels like they need a gun. Well, I mean, except for target practice, because that's fun. But I have a gun, and I almost never do target practice. I have a gun only for one reason, so that I can shoot somebody if they try to kill me. Or I could defend my family if someone breaks into my house at night. Anyway, I want an America where only target practice is on people's minds. I don't want an America free of guns, but I would like an America free of fear. And we're not going to have that as long as the government concentrates itself on health and human services and health care and welfare and medicine and food and housing and clothing for the poor people. What we need the government to do is execute justice upon those who break the law without quarter so that they will fear the justice system. And then we could all relax and we could go plinking on the weekends. And during the week, we could keep our guns locked up. We wouldn't even have... I want us to keep our guns locked and our doors unlocked. That's what I would like to see happen in the country. And it could happen if we could just get the justice system to stop being an industry. All right. Now, speaking of robots, well, that's not exactly robots, but the headline said Camden's RoboCops out there in Camden, New Jersey, with the microphones and the cameras and all that. But let's talk about real robots. This is from the Science Really file, Salinas, California. A new generation of machines is targeting the last frontier of agricultural mechanization. What do you think that is? It's fruits and vegetables destined for the fresh market. You know, like the tomatoes and the oranges and that you see at the store? You know, the store has high standards for that stuff because we're all so shallow that we won't buy a tomato if it looks ugly. Or a piece of fruit, if it doesn't look just so. And so fruits and vegetables have had to been picked by hand because otherwise they get bruised, they get scratched, and your average suburban mom will not buy a bruised or scratched piece of fruit. Well, a new generation of robots is trying to target that last frontier, fruits and vegetables that actually sit there on the shelf, not the ones that go for processing to make juice and stuff. But the stuff you actually see on the shelf. Now, fruits and vegetables have resisted mechanization because they're so sensitive. But researchers are now designing robots for the most delicate crops by integrating advanced sensors, powerful computing, electronics, computer vision, robotic hardware, and algorithms, as well as networking and high-precision GPS localization technologies, all to pick a piece of fruit. It's very impressive. Well, according to this article from the AP, for a century, fruits and vegetables have been planted, thinned, and harvested by an army of migrant workers. But the machines could prove revolutionary. Farm robots could provide relief from labor shortages, you know, because we can't find any young white people who want to work anymore. You couldn't get a young suburban teenager out in the fields for anything. That's why we have to bring in the migrants from south of the border. Because all of our young people, well, I don't know. It's just hard to find anybody young who willing to break a sweat anymore. So we've had to bring in these migrants. But anyway, these robots could make up for our slacker youth and even reduce costs, increase quality, and yield a more consistent product. Yeah. Now, but there are farm worker advocates who say that mechanization would lead to workers losing their jobs, growers using more pesticide and the food supply becoming unsafe. You've always got the advocates, right? Now, my question is, if you're a farm worker, maybe you can't speak English, but I'm sure you can speak. And in my opinion, these advocates, these are just hucksters. They're out to take a cut and make a living advocating for someone who can actually speak for himself, like the farm workers. And all of that. So if you're an advocate for someone who can speak for himself, you are extraneous by definition, and we don't need to hear from you. So that's all we're going to bring you from the farm worker advocates. Because, I mean, if you're out there picking fruit, breaking your back, I mean, if it was me, I'd be hoping someone could come along with a robot so maybe I could do something else. Do you think people who work in the field like slaves want to do that for the rest of their lives? Well, I hope they don't. Anyway, we have a quote from one sad California bureaucrat. He says, if you can put a man on the moon, you can figure out how to pick fruit with a machine. Well, I suppose that's true, but I doubt anyone in the government of California is going to figure it out. It's going to be private industry. No matter how much they strangle us in the private sector, we're still smart enough and hardworking enough and entrepreneurial enough to overcome the incredible burdens that our criminal government, our criminal, illegitimate government puts upon us. And we will hopefully save them from themselves in a temporal sense, okay? All right. Well, I don't know if I want to do this story. Yeah. So there's a Michigan family found out that they're... Well, I'll just read the story, all right? This is from The Blaze. The Jansuski family is fighting the local school district in Rose, Michigan, after it emerged that a male teacher molested their eighth grade son this several years ago, 9 years ago. The teacher was found out, and then unbelievably, six other teachers spoke out against the sentence that was handed down against the child molester. So did the teachers call for the death penalty? Because it was a 15 to 30 year sentence. I would have spoken out against that as well. I would have said, what do you mean you're going to put a child molester in prison? He needs to be executed. But that's not what the other teachers who had worked with the molester said. No, they said the sentence was too harsh. Yeah, they said that Neil, that's the teacher, the child molester, Neil, teacher, child molester, almost a synonym these days, almost. They said Neil has pled guilty for his one criminal offense, but he's not a predator. This was an isolated incident, said the other teachers, as they defended him. So how do you continue sending your kids into the government schools, ladies and gentlemen? You got teachers defending other teachers who have molested children. The dad, Jansuski, I heard him on the radio. His kid was completely destroyed by this. The kid's got mental problems. The kid's a mess, and he has been since eighth grade, and nobody knew why until all this came out. He says he wants the six teachers and the board member on the school board who sat with the pedophile's family in court. So these teachers and a board member at the school board sat on the molester's side of the courtroom during the trial. Well, the dad wants those teachers and that board member fired. But some people, especially there on the school board, have said that if we fire these people, they might sue, and that could bankrupt the whole county. The county could go broke if we fire these people who defended the child molester. So it's almost as if the child molester and his supporters are holding the town hostage. We can't fire them. Because if they sue, we'll go broke. Unbelievable. The father says, since when do we put a price on a child? They say we could go bankrupt, we can't fire them. The father says, well, since when do we put a price on a child? Well, Dad, maybe the day you decided to send your kid to the government school so that you and your wife could make more money or maybe get an extra car, or maybe get a bigger house. I don't know why you did it. Maybe it's just because you were trained from the time you were a little kid that what you were supposed to do was hand your kids over to the government to be indoctrinated. Maybe that's why you did it. But, I mean, the day you put your kid in the government school is the day you put a price on not just any kid, but you put a price on your own kid. As disturbing as that is, let's go to a story that's at least entertaining. At least it's entertaining. This is from the Baltimore Sun. The University of Maryland Eastern Shore plans to spend about $60,000 on bulletproof whiteboards. Yeah, you know what a whiteboard is, right? You go to a meeting, they write on the whiteboard, they can wipe it off. Whiteboards are great. Well, they want bulletproof whiteboards that can stop bullets These whiteboards, they say, can be used as a personal shield for professors under attack. And they also serve as a portable writing pad. So you can also write on them, but the first order of business is that they be bulletproof so the professor can hide behind the whiteboard while his kids in his class are slaughtered. The company making them is called Hardwire LLC. They started out making military armor, and now they've found a new market in the classrooms of America. High-profile incidents, according to the Baltimore Sun, like Sandy Hook and Virginia Tech, have led campuses across the country to focus on, what, morals? Teaching kids right and wrong? No, they've decided to focus on safety. Yep, they've got people focused on safety and tightening security. Maybe teach kids that they were created by God and that God is going to judge them and they're going to be held responsible. No, let's focus on safety and let's tighten security. There we go. Oh, and body armor. Another focus on the campuses across America. Yeah, there's body armor, bulletproof whiteboards. They also make bulletproof door shields, clipboards, and inserts for children's backpacks, which I believe we covered on this program. The absurdity of it all. When you could just teach kids right and wrong and discipline them, but instead they're going to focus on safety, tightening security, body armor, bulletproof whiteboards, clipboards, backpacks. The president of the university says that she decided to order 200 of these bulletproof whiteboards for the faculty. So the school could be proactive rather than reactive in a violent situation. And this should encourage any parents out there who are considering sending your kids to any level of government education to be proactive, don't be reactive, and keep your kids out of the government school. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and I'm so glad that you have joined me on this special Friday night edition of the Weekly Worldview. And don't worry, I'll be back with you on Sunday. It's just that I was gone last Sunday, out saving an America, being a great American. And so I'm so sorry that I left you all hanging on Sunday, and that's why we've decided to come to you with this special Friday night edition. And I've got, well, more news from the government schools, if you can believe that. Speaking of focusing on safety and bulletproof clothing for the children, out in Dallas, according to CBS, all the extra security in response to what happened at Sandy Hook and other venues, now there's new rules that are greeting parents this new school year. Yeah, new rules. They have the new rules deal with access to their children's. Yeah, that's right. When you drop your kids off now in the Dallas metropolitan area at his local government school processing center, you can no longer walk your kid to class. Well, or at least you won't be able to. Yeah, they're going to make you drop your kid off at the curb because enhanced security measures on public school campuses include the elimination of parents walking their children to classrooms after the first week of school. Why do you think those in the government bureaucracy who run the schools with their focus on safety and bulletproofness, why do you think they would be worried about parents walking their children to the classroom? Well, the answer is obvious. The parents went to government school as well, and they might flip out and start shooting. That's why. So the schools have become prisons. I mean, have you been to a school lately? The doors lock as if you're being locked into a prison cell. And there's bulletproof glass and there's cameras everywhere. It's as if you're dropping your kid off in prison. And now you can't even walk the kid to class. Let's see here. I've got a quote from one sad sack parent who says, "I really want to take my son to class since it's his first time in school. I mean, they may have security, but I want to know where my kid is going at all times. Yet I'm dropping him off at a government school and then I'm going somewhere else. Am I schizophrenic? Dad, are you schizophrenic? What do you mean you want to know where your kid's going at all times? You're dropping him off at the school and then you're leaving." Another parent interviewed for this story by CBS down in Dallas had a different viewpoint. She said, "As long as I can see him walk in that building, that'll be fine. Because once he's in that building, they'll take care of him." Unquote. That was a mom. "Once he's in there, they'll take care of him." Yeah, mom, they'll take care of him, all right. Yeah, they'll take care of him. Now, there's a good chance if your kid goes to government school for 12 years, he'll never be shot, not even shot at. But there's a better than even chance that his heart and soul will be destroyed by the godless heathens in the government schools. The sexual deviants and perverts, the drug addicts, the freaks and the communists run the government school system. And if you send your kids there, you're sinning against your child and you're sinning against God. And you'll be held responsible. I don't even want to get into a whole spiritual thing. I mean, you'll be held responsible on this earth when your child is living through some kind of nightmare that he's been introduced to through connections there at the government school, whether it's a teacher or other students who corrupt and defile your child and destroy their heart and their mind and their soul. You'll have to live through that and you'll have to pick up the pieces. So you're going to pay on this side or on the other side. So please, just find a way. There's a way. Trust me, it can be done. I barely graduated high school, and I'm able to find a way to make enough of a living so that my wife can stay home and raise my precious children. So you can do it, you know? I want to encourage you. So I'm done condemning, I'm done accusing, and I'm done judging. Now I want to encourage you. And I want to encourage you to encourage others because the stakes could not be higher. And this is not a joke. This is not hyperbole. Read the newspapers every day. If your kids are going to the government schools, just sit down and talk to them about what's going on there, about who they encounter and who they meet and what they're taught and what they're thinking about. Folks, it's criminal what's being perpetrated against our children in the government schools. And it's time for an exodus. You know, I learned a long time ago that the Bible teaches that God's people are separate from the world. We live in the world, but we're not of the world. And so I think one of the most obvious manifestations of that truth is the homeschooling movement in this country. We have, not out of a sense of piety or a sense of legalism, decided to pull our kids out of the government schools. We have chosen to do it because we love God. And the two are simply inconsistent. I can't imagine trying to communicate with my 12-year-old daughter if she had been going to the government schools for the past 6 years. I just can't imagine the dichotomy that would exist in her mind between what Daddy says and what her teacher says. And I know that because I grew up with that. I grew up with a war going on inside my soul. You know, here's my dad. He's a fundamentalist, a firebrand, Bible thumper. And here's my erudite professor in the science class teaching me that I evolved from nothing and that God was an outdated idea. Anyway, I had to struggle, and at a certain point, I rejected my dad, and I rejected the Bible, and I paid for it, ladies and gentlemen. It was I'm lucky to have survived, as a matter of fact. And so I just want to encourage you all. I've gone too far with this now, probably, but I'm very passionate about this issue, and so I just want to be an encouragement to you. And if you keep sending your kids to the government schools, well, then I'll keep judging you. Yes, condemning and all of that. Yeah. Please find a way, ladies and gentlemen, because it's worth the life you save may be your own kid's life. All right. Now, let's move on. My extremely attractive audio engineer has left the sound booth for the moment so I can do this story on transgendered people. Yeah, she's been getting after me about all the queer. She says, I just can't take it. Please stop. I said, well, I can't stop. They're pouring out of the closet faster than we can stuff them back in with a plunger, for crying out loud. They're everywhere. Anyway, interesting news, interesting story here from Fox News in Sacramento. A California state lawmaker says that a new California law allowing transgendered students to choose which restroom and locker room they use at school is part of the reason at least one of his sons will not return to his local public school this fall. That's right. This is Assemblyman Tim Donnelly. Lives in Southern California, out in Twin Peaks. He says the new law will encourage inappropriate behavior among teenagers. Gee, he's a pretty sharp guy. You can't get much past this guy, right? Now, Governor Jerry Brown signed the bill into law last week or the week before. I forget. I've been on the road. But crazy moonbeam Jerry Brown, the definition of a drug-addled sociopath who has somehow found himself in control of the reins of power in probably the largest individual economy on the planet, California. Yeah, Jerry Brown, a psychopathic, drug-whacked-out freak, is the governor of California. It's just shocking. He signed the law saying that boys can just decide if they, you know, if they want to go with the girls, go with the girls. You want to go with the boys, go with the boys. If the girls want to go with the boys, well, do the girls want to go with the boys? Does that even happen anymore? No. Not if we have anything to do with it here in the Jerry Brown administration. There will be no boys with girls or girls with boys. No, that's just very old-fashioned. Perhaps that will be classified as a mental illness. During my children's lifetime, heterosexuality will be classified as a mental illness, and heterosexuals will be institutionalized. It's quite possible. All right, now let's get back to the story. Jerry Brown signed the law. Now, this Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, the California state lawmaker, his 13 and 16-year-old son attend a school district in the San Bernardino government school factory system out there. And he says he's pulling the 13-year-old out of middle school, no questions asked. And he says his other son is uncertain if he will return to his public high school. So there's a brave dad. You know, he can't, doesn't have the stones to tell his 16-year-old that you're not going back there either, son. I'm sorry. Give me the keys. Anyway, so he says he's pulling him out because the school has finally gone completely insane. So is that what it takes with you people out there? Does the school system has to go completely berserk before you get your kids out of it? Apparently that's what it took for this particular Republican. Donnelly, by the way, says he is considering a bid for governor next year. Well, Mr. Donnelly, if you're considering a bid for governor, the last thing you should be doing is taking half measures with your kids. Well, I'm going to talk with my 16-year-old, and we're going to discuss the options. You know, just pull your kids out of the school, Mr. Donnelly, for this and a myriad of other reasons, and do the right thing, and maybe you could be the governor. Although, I don't know, in California, I think you have to be certifiably insane now to be allowed on the ballot.
South!
All right, I'm all fired up. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Sammy, Eddie, put those guitars away. No, they're coming back. They're coming back. All right, that's enough of that. Cut it out. Extremely attractive audio engineer. It gets out of hand sometimes, I'll tell you what. All right, come on. All right, we're back to news. We're going to Benghazi. We go from Van Halen to Benghazi because we have to report on, important news. Middle Eastern security sources have described both the U.S. mission and a nearby CIA annex in Benghazi as the main intelligence and planning center for U.S. aid to Syrian rebels. I know that's what we've suspected for a long time. Many of these rebel fighters, by the way, according to this story from WorldNet Daily, are known members of terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda. Yeah. So we've been helping Al-Qaeda. Well, there really is no good guys over there. So let's see here. Libya. According to the WorldNet Daily report, Libya was likely the most extensive effort to combat the proliferation of shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles called MANPADS. That stands for Man Portable Air Defense System. Shoulder-launched rockets. So apparently when Muammar Gaddafi fell, there were an awful lot of these rockets that were unaccounted for. We reported on it right here at the time. And apparently the CIA was over there trying to find them, collect them. I don't know if they were going to destroy them. Maybe they were going to sell them to the Syrians. I don't know what was going on. But apparently they lost a number of them. And, there is some fear now that perhaps terrorists have gotten a hold of these shoulder-fired rockets. And there's some fear in the government that they're going to be used to try to take down an airliner. And so now this flies in the face of my theory on Benghazi. So the WorldNet Daily story, I've got another one here too. I think this is from the Jerusalem Post. Joseph DeGeneva, former U.S. attorney who represents Benghazi whistleblowers, has stated that 400 surface-to-air missiles were taken from Libya during the attacks and that the government's afraid they're going to use them to shoot down aircraft. Nope, this is from WorldNet Daily as well, not the Jerusalem Post. WorldNet Daily had reported that in a largely unnoticed speech to a think tank 7 months before the Benghazi attack, a top State Department official described an unprecedented multi-million-dollar U.S. effort to secure anti-aircraft weapons in Libya after the fall of Muammar Gaddafi's regime. We reported on it right here. We probably were quoting WorldNet Daily. So, you know, my theory was that it was all a setup and that Barry never expected the ambassador to be killed. He just expected him to be kidnapped by friends of Barry and then released prior to the election. Well, it looks like I was flat out wrong. It looks like the CIA had all these rockets and maybe the terrorists just decided they were going to take them. Yeah, maybe Benghazi was loaded up with these rockets. And several terrorist factions just decided, you know what, we're going to go in and we're going to take them. And they did, and they killed the ambassador. According to DeGeneva, the lawyer for Benghazi whistleblowers, the Obama administration is worried about an attempt to shoot down an airliner. These 400 missiles may have been diverted in Libya and may have gotten into the hands of some very ugly people. Anti-aircraft missiles, according to the report, would have served as a major threat to any incoming U.S. aircraft. Why did we not send aircraft to rescue our people under fire in Benghazi? It might be because the bad guys had these shoulder-fired anti-aircraft rockets. Now, just because you're going to be shot at and perhaps killed is no excuse not to go in and rescue people. That's why it's a war. That's why people in the military... When you join the military, you understand that at some point you may have to march into fire and perhaps even be killed. So that may explain why the cowards in the White House and at the highest echelons of the intelligence infrastructure in the military decided to stand down. But it's still no excuse, okay? Anyway, so there's something else for you to worry about this weekend. Airliner could be taken out by rockets that were lost by our fearless government and military. All the heroes. Yeah. All right. So that's enough for Benghazi. Very disturbing situation. It's incredible that nobody has been arrested or impeached or even fired over the whole Benghazi thing. It's shocking to me that this kind of thing could happen. But it could be that all of the Republicans and the Democrats who are out there in Washington, who run things and who they meet behind the closed doors in the classified meetings, it could be that they're all involved in it up to their necks. And that's why the Republicans don't really want to push it too hard on Barry, because, well, it'll come out that they knew about it all too. So there's another conspiratorial theory for you to make up for the one that I've had to abandon. I'll just throw another one up there. I just want to keep myself on the cutting edge. All right, let's go to Russia. You know, I've been asking, where can we go if civilization collapses? Well, it might end up being Russia. Yeah, it could be. Russia has a new law. I think we've reported on it. Their anti-homosexual propaganda law. Yeah, let me see if I can give you an update on just the law bans the propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations around minors. It bars discussion of gay rights and homosexual relationships within earshot of children. Now, I would say to Russia, well, at least that's better than what we have here. It certainly doesn't go far enough, because you shouldn't be able to advocate homosexuality, whether amongst adults or children. But certainly, for Russia to at least draw the line at children means that there are some people in the Russian government who are not completely insane. Unlike here in America, where every single politician, I'm convinced, every elected politician, save maybe five or six, I'm sure I could count on one hand the number of politicians here in the United States who are not completely insane, untrustworthy, and hell-bent on killing us all. But apparently in Russia, there must be a few people left who at least are not hell-bent on destroying the children of Russia. Apparently, there are still a few. And they've passed this law. And of course, there's outrage across the world. Why? Because queers are real loudmouths. Have you noticed that? I mean, they got what they wanted in the 90s, and they wouldn't just sit down and shut up and be civil. They have to keep screaming, keep pushing. And so now I guess we're having the Olympics in Russia, and there's a number of athletes who are very upset about the fact that homosexuals might somehow, not be able to propagandize children while they're at the Olympics. I'm not sure what the queers are screaming about now. But I have a story from Nick Simons. This is from CNN. Nick Simons is upset about, he's a runner, by the way, an American runner. He's upset about the anti-homo law over there. He's the first athlete to openly criticize the law on Russian soil. A week or two ago, he dedicated his second place finish to all his gay friends back home. That's great. All humans deserve equality, as however God made them, he said. As much as I can speak about it, I believe it. Whether you're gay or straight or black or white, we all deserve the same rights. If there's anything I can do to champion the cause and further it, I will. I mean, shy of getting arrested, unquote. I don't know if he actually has a lisp, but you know the McBurney Doctrine. That's right. If you harbor homos, you are a homo. So he's all upset about that, for whatever that's worth, and I don't think it's worth much at all. I had another story about a Russian athlete who came out in favor of the law. There it is. Listen to this. Pole vault great Yelena Isinbayeva. She's the Russian who won her third world title last Tuesday. She didn't finish second, like this lisping freak here, this American runner. She won her third world title last week in pole vaulting And here's what she had to say about Russia's anti-homosexual propagation law. She says, if we allow to promote and do all this stuff on the street, we are very afraid about our nation because we consider ourselves like normal, standard people. We just live with boys with women and women with boys. Everything must be fine. It comes from history. We never had any problems. These problems in Russia, we never had. And we don't want to have them, these problems, in the future. Unquote. Yeah, that was pole vault great Yelena Isinbayeva. Who I don't know. I want to buy the t-shirt now. I'm a fan. At least two Swedish athletes who were competing in the track and field events with pole vault great Yelena Isinbayeva, at least two of them painted their fingernails rainbow colors in defiance of Russian authorities, and they weren't even arrested or beaten, to the dismay of the news media, who certainly would like to see someone in Russia, some queer, arrested and beaten on TV. That's what they want. But look, the Russians are just saying, please, okay? At least with the kids. I mean, you pervert freaks. Please. All right. So that's Russia. Here we go. From Russia, let's go to Egypt. Bishop Angelos, I can't pronounce his name. I apologize. Bishop Angelos, the Cairo-born head of the Coptic Orthodox Church in Britain, said he's been told by colleagues in Egypt that 52 churches were attacked in a 24-hour span that started a week ago Wednesday, as well as numerous Christian homes and businesses. So in the mayhem, in the fog of war that has engulfed Egypt over the past couple weeks, we see Islamists and we see criminals taking advantage of the chaos and targeting Christians. The attacks have been blamed by some on supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood. And I'm sure there's some of that, but I'm sure there's just straight up animosity against Christians, which Muslims, I don't care if they're moderate. I don't care if they're extreme. I don't care if they're just C&E Muslims. What would that be? What would be the equivalent of a C&E Muslim? That would be an Eid and what's their other big festival? What's the holiest month? I think that's their sixth holiest. Nope, that's third holiest. Ramadan. Yep, they're an E&R Muslim. Yeah, Eid and Ramadan only. That's the only time they show up at the mosque. I don't care. At all levels, they're taught to hate Christians. And whenever they get the chance, they seem to set Christian buildings on fire and to bludgeon, kill, beat, strangle, rape, and otherwise assault Christians. And that's going on at an alarming rate in Egypt. And for those of you here in this country who are uncomfortable about speaking up in public for Jesus Christ, well, you just don't. We just don't even know how good we've got it. In Egypt, they'll drag you out of your store, chop your head off, burn your store down, rape your wife, and kill your children. So please, when you have an opportunity to speak up for the truth that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, the Savior of the world, that God is our Creator and our Judge, when you have that opportunity, please speak up while you still can. It's open season on Christians in Egypt, especially in the Sinai Peninsula. We reported on that. I think I did that on Bob Enyart's broadcast last week, maybe earlier this week. This is coordinated violence going on out in Egypt. And we just pray for our brothers who are persecuted. Egypt's Christian minority, this is a CNN report, has been the target of a number of attacks in recent years. We've reported on them all here. The Catholic churches, the Coptic churches, the stores, the families who've been attacked. And what does the American government say about it? Not a peep. Why? Because they're not Christians. They hate Jesus Christ more than they hate mobs killing people. If the mobs are killing Christians, they hold their tongue. Besides, we're living in a post-Christian country. There's no one in the government who has any idea about true religion and they're all demented and unqualified, and they're illegitimate, and they should be removed by all peaceful means necessary. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. All right, now, from the Science Really file, Elon Musk, the serial entrepreneur who started a Tesla and SpaceX, he says he's got an idea. He says he's got an idea for what he calls the Hyperloop, and he wants to make Los Angeles to New York a 45-minute trip. Yeah. And he wants to be able to get us to Beijing in about 2 hours in what he calls the Hyperloop, which is basically a giant vacuum tube mounted either above the ground or even underwater. He says it would be combined with a magnetic levitation system like the ones used on conventional bullet trains. And you'd basically hop in the vacuum tube and be sucked and pushed a combination all the way to wherever you're going. Yeah. Well, I think there needs to be a revolution in transportation. You know what? I mean, if 10 or 20 billion people are going to inhabit this planet, which I hope happens, I mean, the airlines are maxed out. I couldn't take it. They're pretty much done. But how do we get Americans interested in mass transit? That's the problem Mr. Musk doesn't understand. The reason his Tesla is successful is because it's a cool-looking car, and it can be your car, your little space. So I think Mr. Musk says, by the way, he doesn't have time to do this. He's just throwing the idea out there. He says he's got the idea, but he doesn't want to patent it or do anything like that. He just wants to throw it out there. He's going to publish some sort of plans for this Hyperloop in an open source manner online so that other people with time and money could actually build it. Well, I'll go there and I'll put in my 2 cents, Mr. Musk. If you want the Hyperloop to work, and I believe it can, what you need to do is figure out a way to get me in my car to Beijing in 2 hours. If I could drive my car into your tube, I would do that. But as far as getting on it like a bus with other people, I'm sorry. Even if it's a 45-minute ride, it's not that appealing to me. Figure out how to let us take our cars, and I think you've got a smash hit and a genuine revolution in transportation. All right, that's just my advice to Mr. Musk, who's probably a smart fellow. His IQ's probably higher than mine. I don't want to do this story. That's depressing. A judge orders a baby's name to be changed from Messiah. Yeah? His parents named their kid Messiah. And a judge has decided to change it. Change the name to Martin. This is why I wrote this down. The judge said in open court, this judge said the word Messiah is a title. And it's a title that has only been earned by one person. And that one person is Jesus Christ. A judge said that. So just when you think there's no hope left and you feel like Elijah and you're saying, Lord, they're all after me. There's nobody left. Nobody. I'm all alone out here. Please. You find out that there's someone else out there, at least one other person outside of your immediate circle of friends and influence who's not completely insane. The judge actually said Jesus Christ is the one and only Messiah. Now that's encouraging. Yeah. All right, do it. Now, these other stories I have are depressing, and I don't want to end on something depressing. So I guess that's it. I guess I don't have anything else to do. Let me look through my pile of second-tier stories and see if there's anything mildly amusing. No, yeah, I can't do that. Man sets himself on fire. I can't do these. That's why they're in the second tier, because I couldn't take the depressing, violent nature of the news of the day. So I put them in the second pile, and then I figure, well, maybe I'll do some of them if I run out of news. But they never get done. There's a reason they're in the second tier, and they're going to stay in the second tier. So I guess that's just it. I guess I'll just sign off, and I'll be back with you on Sunday, by the way. This is a bonus. I guess it's not a bonus because I missed last Sunday. But I'll be back with you on Sunday should the Lord tarry. My name's Doug McBurney, and I want to thank KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you Sunday, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.